welcome to Native America Calling. From our studios in Albuquerque, I'm Andy Murphy. In some rural indigenous communities of northern Canada, a box of tampons or pads can cost twice the price elsewhere. That forces some women to go without feminine hygiene products, and some are even skipping work and school instead. The cost of feminine hygiene products is not the only issue women have to think about. There's some shame and stigma connected to menstruation. How are Native women affected by stigma surrounding their moon times? We're talking about menstruation issues after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A United Nations representative who focuses on indigenous issues has wrapped up her two-week visit to the U.S. She met with tribes in the Southwest and on the Northern Plains. Jim Kent spoke with the Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous People about her trip and has this report.
Victoria Tauli Corpus travels the world from her home in the Philippines to investigate issues of concern for indigenous peoples. Tauli Corpus began her journey in the U.S. by visiting the Navajo, Hopi, and Pueblo people, where they discussed concerns over oil and gas exploration and uranium mining. Then she headed north to the Fort Berthold Reservation and saw the gas flares of the Bakken oil fields. The last stop for Tauli Corpus was in North Dakota at the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, where she examined the Dakota Access Pipeline issue.
I find it very unfortunate that the consultations have not been done with the tribes in Standing Rock Sioux, and even the environmental impact assessment that was made by the Army Corps of Engineers didn't reflect the concerns of the tribes, especially in relation to how their sacred places and cultural sites are going to be adversely affected by the pipeline.
Tauli Corpus adds that as one who's taken part in public protests in the Philippines, she feels that local law enforcement were excessive in their use of force against the Dakota Access Pipeline protesters. The official report on the UN Special Rapporteur's visit to indigenous peoples in the U.S. is expected to be available to tribes and the federal government in June. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
New figures from the Canadian government suggest the cleanup of drinking water problems in First Nations communities is moving slowly. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, while some drinking water advisories have been lifted, others have been added.
The government statistics show that there are still more than 70 drinking water advisories in First Nations communities across Canada. Over the past year and a half, about 18 of those warnings have been resolved. That's allowed people to drink tap water again. But figures from the Department of Indigenous and Northern Affairs also show that there have been a dozen new advisories. The statistics highlight just how difficult and complex the job facing the government is. Ottawa has promised to have all the long-term advisories on water resolved within 5 years. And last year, it planned $1.8 billion over 5 years to help those First Nations communities build new water infrastructure on reserves. Romeo Saganash is a First Nations Member of Parliament for the New Democratic Party. He's also the party's Indigenous Affairs critic. Saganash says the government is just not moving fast enough.
You know, they've been here for a year and a half almost, and at that rate, at that pace, I don't think we'll get to the finish line with the remaining 3.5 years.
Many First Nations leaders agree the process is taking too long, and they blame the federal government bureaucracy. But the Minister of Indigenous Affairs, Carolyn Bennett, says the government will do what's necessary because it is so important as a commitment to the quality of life, dignity, and fairness. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Some Alaska Native dog mushers are among those taking part in the 2017 Iditarod sled dog race in Alaska, including John Baker. Baker, who's from Kotzebue, is a veteran of the race, a participant since the 1990s. He won the Iditarod in 2011, becoming the first Inupiat to win and the first champion from Northwest Alaska. Baker has placed in the top 10 more than a dozen times. A ceremonial start to the race was held over the weekend in Anchorage. More than 70 mushers and their dog teams are leaving from the official start in Fairbanks. The near 1,000-mile journey ends in Nome. The race is a tribute to Alaska's history and the role of sled dogs. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. Despite the fact that we hardly think about it, half of the world's population deals with menstruation issues. There's stigma and even shame that keeps conversations about the topic out of view. There's also the high cost of feminine hygiene products. Indigenous women in rural northern Canada have to pay almost $20 for a box of tampons, which is easily 2 to 3 times more than what most of us are used to. To address this problem, Nicole White started the Moontime Sisters, a group that's gathering donations of feminine hygiene products to distribute to Indigenous girls and young women. The group is gaining momentum and is a tribute to some positive change that can come from open conversation. In the U.S., several U.S. states have passed bills to eliminate taxes on feminine hygiene products after women and women's groups urged them to think differently about pads and tampons as a necessary part of female life instead of a luxury item. So, what do you think? Should we start thinking about menstruation and feminine hygiene products differently? And in your Native community, what does your Native culture say about menstruation? And have these views changed? Give us a call and join our conversation today. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan in Canada is Nicole White. She's a community organizer, a student at First Nation University of Canada, and the founder of the Moontime Sisters, and she's Métis. Welcome to Native America Calling, Nicole.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
Yeah. All right, so why did you start this group, and what did the need look like before?
Sure. I heard a story that young women were staring, they weren't able to go to school because they couldn't access feminine hygiene products. And the group that was organizing was just focusing on menstrual cups, which are really handy, but they don't work for everyone. So I thought, well, I'd bring together a small group of friends to gather a collection of tampons and pads, and it's just a mushroom from there.
And how many products have you gathered so far? I mean, it looks like this thing has taken off.
It really has. We just formed on January 31st, and we had a work bee in Saskatoon here, and the final count is just over 96,000 tampons, pads, granola bars, and reusable cloth pads and menstrual cups. So it's going to be a massive load to send up north.
And what are menstrual cups?
Yeah, so they're a silicone reusable product that you sort of fold and slide in, kind of like a tampon, but you build a totally different relationship with your fluids. You have to be okay with that, and you just pull it out, dump it, rinse it, and then put it back up again.
All right. And when are you going to distribute some of these products to the ladies up north?
We had originally planned to deliver yesterday, but we unfortunately are in the middle of a nasty spring here. So we had a huge downpour of snow. So we drove for 2 hours and didn't get very far. So we came back. A shipping company actually has volunteered to pack everything up and take it up for us on Thursday. So it'll be there shortly.
Besides getting pads and tampons and menstrual cups to use, what else are you hoping these Indigenous women are getting when you guys make these deliveries?
You know, I completely underestimated the scope of this project, but also the ripple effects of it. I've heard from a number of women who grew up in rural, isolated, remote communities, and they really talked about the fact that they didn't have access to product regularly. And the idea that we were going to make this readily available at their schools and they wouldn't have to ask any questions and it would just be there for them, that makes a huge difference.
When these products are not readily available, how are, besides women and girls skipping school and work, how are they affected when they know that, you know, these products are just not available?
Well, you know, it's all about dignity. And Moon Time is a sacred ceremonial time for young women coming of age. Every month we've got that time of rejuvenation, a literal shedding of a layer. And, you know, we talk about it being powerful, but how can you feel powerful when you are trying to navigate something like this that could disrupt your day? You know, we've all been stuck in a crunch where we don't have the product available and we end up turning to, like, toilet paper, which is fine. But what would happen is to increase our own personal dignity if it was just there for us?
All right. And how can people find more information about Moon Time Sisters?
So Moon Time is actually available on our Facebook page. It's totally open, and we are encouraging people to start up groups across the country. Obviously, you have a larger scope on your radio show, so I'd be happy to see this type of work having an even wider scale.
All right. Thank you so much. Let's go to Sharon Assatoyer. She is the executive director and CEO of the Native American Community Board, which is a parent organization to the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center. And Sharon is Comanche. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Sharon.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. So what do you think about Nicole's organization here, raising donations for Indigenous women up in the North?
I think it's very commendable. There is a huge price difference in products between even here in Alaska and of course, here in Canada. The farther north you go, the more expensive everything gets, from food items to personal care items, and it's because of the travel involved and the shipping and so forth. But anyway, I think it's a good idea. I just want to kind of give you a little heads up here. With the menstrual cup, there needs to be some information about the local quality of water, because some water is well water and has contaminations. And so you want to put a little caution there for women that might use it so that they're, you know, they pretty much know what the quality of their water is. But, you know, people have to relate. When you rinse something, you know, you're contaminating a product with whatever is in the water. And if it's not good quality, then there can be issues later on down the line, especially right. If it's radioactive water.
Yeah, maybe if you have a boil water advisory, you might not want to be using a product like this. Sharon, where do we learn about some of these products, how to use them? I mean, you know, a young girl who's in the store looking at all of this, you know, where do they get that? Should we just turn to the back of the label, the back of the package, or where's the best place to learn about feminine hygiene?
Well, from your women's circle, your mother, your sisters, your aunties, your grandma, your cousins, in traditional families, in communities, the information is passed on from one generation to the next, and the business of women always has been just that, the business of women. And so women share that information and, in fact, celebrate the transition time of becoming a woman. And when a young girl leaves her adolescence behind and enters the world of womanhood, for the Ihantuan or the Sioux up here, you know, it's called the the Ishnante ceremony, and it's the becoming of a woman. So it's a time to celebrate a young woman's life and to bring women in to her circle that she can depend on for various kinds of advice and information as she enters this time in her womanhood.
All right, we're talking about menstruation today here on Native America Calling. Where did you learn about feminine hygiene and women? Where did you learn about your own bodies when it was changing and you had your first period? Was it your mom or your grandma? Or was it even your dad who stepped up and gave you this talk about your period, your moon time, menstruation? Call in and tell us about how you were educated in this topic. The number to join is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we also have our eye on Twitter, where our handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Sharon, when we're talking about conversations we should have with our family members or the women in our family, do you think we should have conversations within the family about these things, about menstruation, where maybe our brothers and our fathers are involved? I mean, what could come out from these kinds of conversations within a family?
Well, you know, if a family engages in traditional practices, then the women talk to the women, and the male family members will talk to the male. In the event that there's an absentee father in the house or not in the house, there's usually someone within the family that can talk to the men or the young men, the boys, in the household, and so it's usually done that way. Young women will turn to other women for information, especially about something so personal in nature, and she's given information about not only what it is and what it means and the power that comes with it, because it is life-giving force. And, you know, we have the power to alter a ceremony. So we know to not participate in various kinds of ceremonies. Mainstream society has put a lot of negative connotations and jokes about when a woman starts and enters into womanhood. And they've also, I think the church has also had its own impact, you know, talking about girls are unclean and during that time period and so on. And so that really has, I think, impacted not only Indigenous girls as they transform into, make that transition into womanhood, but mainstream America. You know, it should be celebrated. I know some of Billy Avery from the National Black Women's Health Project many years ago said that she celebrated it with her daughters and made a cake with red icing and invited all of her girlfriends over, and they celebrated, and some of the aunties came around and they talked about it and answered any questions that the young women had. And that's what we do as well. We have certain ceremonies that go on. You're introduced into your community as a woman, and from that point on, you know, you're welcomed into the society of womanhood. So there's, you know, there is some public outing or introduction into your community. And because a lot of these ceremonies are taken, are done privately, but part of them is also done publicly. To introduce you into your community as a woman. So it's it's nothing that has any negative connotations. In fact, it's a very positive event in a young woman's life to make this transition, because she's now capable of having children, of giving life and passing on another generation. And that's about the most important thing that occurs in our environment, you know, is a procreation.
All right, Sharon, when you say, you know, women are affected by, you know, some of the shame and embarrassment, I mean, are we talking about self-esteem, or what are we talking about when you say women are affected by some of these stigmas here?
Well, some of the mainstream society has a very negative connotation on when young women are having their time. They talk about they put it down. They you know, it's like it's a negative thing that a woman has to go through. You know, they say it's dirty. It's just you know, for a woman to hear that, it's like, whoa, what do you mean I'm dirty? You know, a certain time of the month, every month for, you know, for the next 40 years. I mean, that's just a horrible thing to say to a young woman. You know, a lot of people make jokes about it and so forth. It's nothing to joke about. You know, it's something that we celebrate as Indigenous people, and we hold it in high esteem, this transition that a woman makes. And there are things that in some tribes, some nations, that some people do and others don't. But pretty much women know what their role is because it's been explained to them. By, you know, their mother or another elder or another female in the family. And we know what's expected of us and what we should expect of ourselves. Mainstream has a lot of negative connotations about when a young woman is on her time. And it can be very hurtful and make it an embarrassing situation when it's not anything to be embarrassed about. It's something very positive and something that we should embrace and celebrate in a young woman's life.
All right. Today we're talking about menstruation and menstruation issues, and we're getting into some of the stigma and shame that women also go through when they're on their moon time, when they're on their period. Have you ever gone through a situation like that where you thought, you know, I don't deserve this shame or this embarrassment? I can't control it. Was there ever a time where you felt really embarrassed or, you know, somebody said something, they made fun of your time and it made you feel bad? Call in and tell us about it. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-998-IVE. How has our thoughts on menstruation maybe changed over time? Sharon was talking about, you know, it's a sacred time. Sometimes it's celebrated within our tribes, but then we deal with this shame and embarrassment afterwards. Have you noticed that in your family, in your culture? Again, the number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. And joining us in studio today is Nicole Martin. She's a Fort Lewis College graduate with a bachelor's degree in Indigenous Studies and a minor in Gender and Women's Studies. And she's Diné. Welcome back.
Yata'ed, thank you for having me again.
Yeah. So what do you think about the conversation so far? We're just getting into period shaming. Have you gone through anything like that?
Period shaming, like when I first started having my menstrual cycle, I was in middle school. So as Nicole had mentioned earlier, when you don't have those feminine hygiene products, you know, then you have to resort to like, hey, can I go to the nurse's office? Because, you know, I'm menstruating, I'm leaking, you know. And when you have to tell that to a male teacher, they do, as also Sharon said, you know, they look at you like, you're dirty, or like, that's disgusting. And so like, for me, that made me embarrassed to talk about like, hey, you know, I'm leaking, I need to go home, like, I didn't bring anything extra, you know.
And when you had your first one, did you have a Kinalta?
Yes, when I had my menstruation, I had a Kinalta. And it was, for me, like, when I reflect on it, I see it in a different way. Like, I had a very, like, colonized mindset of what my Kinalta was, you know. My Kinalta was 2-day ceremony instead of the 4-day ceremony. And my Kinalta was run by a medicine man instead of a medicine woman. So then I have a medicine man trying to teach me how to transition into being a young woman. So I lost out on a lot of maybe some really, really good advice from an elder woman to teach me how to, like, this is your transitioning from a young woman or a young girl into a young woman, you know. So I didn't think of it in that way until I grew up and I saw my boyfriend's niece's Kinalta, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, I wish I had that. I wish I had, like, the teachings and, like, the female relatives to have, like, an input on it. And also not that, just, like, the traditional stories of, like, changing woman and, like, her significance and everything that goes along with the ceremony. I wish I had more in-depth knowledge about that, so I could be more empowered rather than embarrassed sitting there thinking, oh, my God, everyone knows I'm on my period, you know?
Yeah. And just briefly explain what a Kinalta is.
So a Kinalta is for a Diné, a Navajo young girl, when she gets her first menses. And it's a ceremony that goes into 4 days and 4 nights. And it's a lot of work for her. It's a lot of mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual work for her to go through these 4 days to transition. And all these stories and these songs that go along with it, and grinding the corn to make the cake, the corn cake that's built in or that's baked underground, you know, and just different aspects of the ceremony. You know, they teach her how to be more humble, more compassionate, more loving. And then when the ceremony comes to a close, they teach her how, or they tell her she's a part of the holy people now. You know, she has the ability to heal, and she has the ability to, like, take sicknesses away, and all the medicine that she's given, like the lichi, the red dirt that she has, you know, that's used as a medicine to help for people, not just for herself, but for her people.
All right, thanks for that. So we're going to go to a break in a little bit, but the Kinalta is maybe one of the most well-known Native puberty ceremonies for young girls, and it starts with her first period. It's all based on menstruation, and that's what we're talking about today. What are your thoughts on menstruation? How have your daughters learned about menstruation from the elders? How is that information passed on? Is it sacred? Is it a ceremony? We'll continue our conversation after the break.
Educators know that getting kids ready for kindergarten is one of the best ways to improve a child's long-term academic performance down the road. We'll take a look at one program in Anchorage, Alaska, that is driven by parents and community members to get kids ready for school. That's on the next Native America Calling.
I'm Michael, a Tlingit and a native of Alaska. Some people in my tribe call me a ghost walker. That's because smoking gave me COPD. That's a disease that makes it harder and harder to breathe, and you can die. My COPD is so bad, my doctor gave me 5 years to live, if I'm lucky. That's why I'm called a ghost walker. And this is the path I have to walk down. My lungs keep getting worse. My chances of getting transplants are shrinking. And the time I have to spend with my family and all of the people I love is slipping away. This is what's left of my life now because of smoking. My tip for you is to quit smoking now and live your life as a person, not as a walking ghost.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Andy Murphy. I remember when I was 11 or 12, I was having my second or third period. And at that time, my cousin got a brand new trampoline, and we were having so much fun jumping around and doing flips in the air. But after 10 minutes, the fun stopped for me because I knew I was staining my pants. I felt so embarrassed. I didn't want to stop playing, and I didn't want to tell any of the women around me, not my sister, not my cousin, not my cousin's mom, and not even my grandma. The embarrassment was so intense, I went in the house and I cried in the bathroom. Later, I blamed my tears on a sprained ankle, but at that time, I felt like my childhood died right there on the trampoline, and now I have to deal with this bleeding for the rest of my life. We're taking this hour to discuss menstruation issues like the embarrassment, the stigma, and the high cost of feminine hygiene products. We're also discussing cultural understandings of menstruation. What does your tribal culture say about menstruation, and how have these views changed over time? You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And let's go back to Nicole Martin. She's a Fort Lewis College graduate with a bachelor's degree in Indigenous Studies and a minor in gender and Women's Studies. Nicole, do you talk about menstruation in your family? Has that ever come up?
Now that I'm older, when I was younger, when I first had my menstruation, you know, my family didn't really talk about what it was, or they didn't go into depth of, like, this is you transitioning into a woman. It was a lot of, like, now you have to, like, protect yourself. You have to watch out. Like, you can't just go and sleep over at anybody's house, you know? Or, like, even in ceremony, they'd be like, you can't participate, you know, if you're on your moon. But they never really went into, like, why. And I think, Instead of just telling people that they can't do things because of and making them very vague, saying like it's because it's sacred and it's private, I feel like they should have an actual conversation. Like, this is why, you know, as Sharon had mentioned earlier, you know, you have that, you're so powerful, you have the ability to bring in life, and sometimes that overshadows on a spiritual wavelength. That overshadows other people's, like, prayers and stuff that's going on in ceremony. And that I understand now. I understand that now that I'm older and I've participated and I've done these things. But when I was young, I was always like, why can't I do these things, you know? And so we really need to have a conversation of, like, an actual conversation of, like, what your menstruation is and what spiritual power that you embody during that time. And my brother, when we talked on the phone, I got off and I talked to my brother. I was like, do you know what a period is? And he's like, what? No. You know, and so my brother, he's 2 years younger than me. So, like, I had to break it down for him. I was like, okay, this is what it is. And he's like, oh, okay. You know, and for me, like, it was a good experience because my parents would have never have talked to him about it. You know, even though he's a guy, but I feel like he needs to know because, as I said, we need to have these allies. We have to have men as our allies. You know, they're the protectors of life, and we're the givers of life. And so we grow up in this Western world, and we have this Western stigma of menstruation and this body or this period shaming, and it brings in a lot of, like, self-conscious and, like, body awareness, and that we're not able to, like, articulate or even contemplate at times. So we need to have, like, men to be genuinely and understanding about, like, what menstruation is, so that, like, if we can't go run to the store to go get tampons or pads or whatever, then they can do it, you know. And I know when my dad has to go, he, like, he goes and gets it, and then he runs to the cash register really quick, like, so nobody will see him carrying tampons or maxi pads, you know. And but for me, like, I don't know, I have to do it every day. Like, I don't feel weird about putting my tampons on, like, the little conveyor belt, you know. But yeah, I feel like the men in my family could be more understanding of what a menstruation is than rather like, ew, that's gross, or like, I don't want to hear that, that's disgusting. Mm-hmm. Well, even my mom too. My mom's very like, oh, that's gross, like, these things are private. And I'm like, no, this is natural. You know, what's happening inside me is natural, and on a spiritual level, it's like empowering too.
So when did your thinking about menstruation change? I know you're talking about during your Kanada, your puberty ceremony, that you felt so embarrassed because everybody knew that you were on your period and you were part of this big, you know, celebration ceremony. Was there a time where you thought, no, I'm not going to be embarrassed about it? I mean, what changed your mind about your own menstruation?
What changed my mind about my menstruation was going through higher education. You know, I had to, I wanted to see why there was this stigma being an Indigenous woman, and like how Indigenous people internalize that stigma of menstruation. Because like another thing that I was told when I was younger, when I was first starting to use feminine hygiene products, my mom was like, she was like, okay, this is, tampons are for females who are sexually active or who've had children, and then maxi pads are for girls who haven't engaged in sex. And so not only is it tying that menstruation to your, like, natural body functions, it's also tying it to your sexuality. So then you have girls who are like, oh, well, I'll choose maxi pads, so they still think I'm a virgin, but, like, virginity is a Western construct too. So, like, I had to, like, look at, like, how I internalize all of this Western stuff in college, and then go back to my ceremonies and find all these other Indigenous books, you know, and see how they talked about just being a human being was.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to leave the men out of this conversation. Men, do you think it's important for you to educate yourself about menstruation? Have you ever maybe asked your sisters or your mom or your significant other, you know, what's going on? What is this all about? You know, do you think it's important to learn about these things and understand, you know, why there are cramps, and understand, you know, why you have to, you know, make an emergency run to your wife's work because, oops, you know, she stained her pants, which happens to all of us. There's a stain that's going to happen within the 40-50 years that we're bleeding, that we're menstruating. Give us a call and tell us what you think about it. Are you educating your boys in your family about menstruation along with your girls in your family? The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we do have Sarah on the line in Albuquerque listening to KUNM. Hey, Sarah, what would you like to add?
Well, I just want to mention that I used to suffer from severe premenstrual syndromes. I would become anemic. I could not, if I had a job, I would be one of those women that would have to stop working for like a whole week before I had my period. It would go on for 10 days, but my relief was I discovered that there is the Morena It's called a hormone release IUD. It's a birth control, but once they insert it in your uterus, it's good for 5 years. So my period stopped for 5 years. So I basically got it to stop my period altogether. And the Planned Parenthood took my Medicaid. I never paid a penny for it. So if women have availability of, you know, having health insurance and going to Planned Parenthood, I would just recommend this Mirena IUD, hormone release. You know, if they start having severe PMS. So I guess when I was young, in my teenagers years, until I hit like 18, my periods were really light. I never felt anything. But once I hit like 18 or 20, it was so severe, you know, that it was like ruining my life. So that was what I wanted to add.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. I can totally relate to that. When I was younger, I know my periods, the cramps used to be so intense. There was one time I thought I was one of those women who was pregnant without knowing I was pregnant. And I thought I was going into labor because the pain was so intense. And I don't think a lot of people, you know, maybe a lot of men know about that, how intense it can sometimes get and just kind of interrupting maybe to your life to have to deal with that every month or every other month. But yeah, you know, there are different treatments out there. Birth control is sometimes the solution for some women who have really terrible PMS and cramps and stuff like that. But of course, you know, check with your healthcare provider, check with your doctor if you're going to go into something like that. Let's see, we have an anonymous caller on line three who wants to add to the conversation. Hi, you're on air.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to share on the cultural side. When I was going through my male puberty stages, my father also talked to me about women's stages and their menstrual cycle. And he didn't give me specific details. He basically told me women have this period every month when they become of age. They have this period where they menstruate, and it's to Native women, it's almost like a rejuvenation stage, and it's almost like a fasting stage. But also with that, he told me these are reasons why we never hit or yell or get angry at women, because we don't know as males what women go through, what power they have as women. They're the giver of life, and they're also in the end stages when we continue our journey. Women help us get there. Women help us continue our journey. And my father told me when you have a girlfriend, a wife, or a significant other, you have to be compassionate. You have to be caring and giving and understanding. And, you know, sometimes you have to go that extra mile during that. He called it a fasting stage and a rejuvenation stage. And that's something I always remembered is, when I went through my puberty stages, that's what my father told me. And we have to be mindful for women. And it's a respectable period in that month, or even the males. And so I teach this to younger men, and I tell them, this is what my father told me. You never hit a woman. You never shove a woman, yell at a woman, speak angry at a woman, because we don't know what they have, what gifts they have for us. And this fasting stage is very, very spiritual.
All right. All right. Thank you so much for that, Anonymous. Let's bring in Sharon Essatoyer again. She's the executive director and CEO of the Native American Community Board, which is a parent organization to the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center. Sharon, you know, we've been making connections to the cultural side of menstruation. And Nicole Martin here, she was just talking about how, you know, things weren't really explained to her fully, you know, why she wasn't invited to these different ceremonies. You know, do you think we need to maybe educate our women a little bit more on exactly why we can't go to certain ceremonies, or maybe we can't even touch certain things? You know, sometimes there's no understanding behind that. Sharon?
Sure. Yeah, part of these becoming a woman ceremonies, they'll bring in other women and they'll talk to you. Basically, they're invited by the female members of your family to come in and to talk to you about certain things. You know, they talk to you everything about from politics to how you should conduct yourself as a hostess in your own family. You know, how you treat other people that come into your home. You know, you serve them something and you never let them leave without taking care of their needs as well. But I want to back up a little bit and talk about the caller before this young man, because one of the things that we know as Indigenous people who've been through these ceremonies is that it's a sign of being healthy to have your period every month. And if you start skipping it, or it changes in its normal pattern for you, it's an indication that there's something going on in your body that you need to attend to. Now, one of the things that I became aware of very young, because I had lots of issues when I was growing up with my time, and that was what you eat. There are certain things out there, like diets that are high in sugar, like soda pop and candy and things like that. And we are enormous consumers of soda pop. It can actually affect your cramping, your flow. So rather than going out and taking something that can suppress something very normal, natural, and healthy from occurring, you want to get to the root cause of why you're having extreme cramping and unusual flow and so on. So it has a lot to do with what we consume. And especially during, you know, like, you know, the first 2 weeks before your time each month. So you want to make sure you're getting plenty of water and plenty of vegetables and fiber and protein, and lay off the sugar, the things that aren't natural that we're not accustomed to eating on a regular basis. It might be something that you've become pretty accustomed to eating on a regular basis, but it's not really a food source. And many times, you know, packaged food, fast food has so many chemicals in it that it can alter your sterility. It can alter your menses. And so we got to leave some of that stuff aside and really take care of ourselves and be healthy. Because, like I said, a change in your pattern is an indication that something is out of whack in your system. And so, excuse me, I am not a proponent of taking something that suppresses something that tells us whether we're healthy and productive. Now, what this young man said, I want to say thank you to whomever your elders were that talked to you, because that's exactly what the kind of support that we need to hear from our male counterparts. And so I, pardon me, I really thank him for sharing that with us today, because it is a natural part of life. And, you know, there are times when, you know, we know that we have to, we know that we should not go around certain ceremonies because the power will alter, can alter the outcome. We also know that, you know, for some tribes, we segregate ourselves at mealtime, or we don't handle food, other people's food. We handle our own during that time. And again, it's because of the enormous power that we have. And so we just need to know what are the customs and the beliefs. And it's always good to know the reasons behind them. And so this is why you turn to your women's group to ask these questions, to find out the answers. And so one of the guests said that, you know, women come into their power, and, you know, their medicine is given to them. I mean, that he tells you right there how special and what a powerful time this is for us as Native women, and something that we need to celebrate and be proud of. And so I wanted to say that, you know, to your...
All right. All right. Thanks, Sharon. Let's take a couple callers. We have Carol in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, listening to KILI. Hey, Carol, what would you like to add?
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Carol. You're on air.
Okay. I'm on my lunch break, so.
All right.
I just have a personal opinion, mm-hmm. and it kind of covers some other ladies that I had a visit with, and we were just talking about the sacredness of becoming a woman and the puberty, and we felt that it wasn't really appropriate to talk about it over the radio and things like that, because we're Lakota women. We believe that for our young females who are in their teens or early teens and becoming a woman, that's talked about during the womanhood ceremony, which is, you know, sacred, and it's a sacred value amongst our Lakota. Now, you know, that's my personal opinion, but I guess the bottom line is, as women, we don't really talk about this over the air, you know, and if anything, it should be discussed in parent groups or at the home with the mother and grandmother or auntie or whoever, whatever female may be in the home. I understand there's not always a two-parent family household, and when it comes to a male who is the father figure, that... he would, in my Teoshpae, I guess I would say, if there was a male only, then he would give that responsibility over to an older sister or else an auntie.
All right. All right. Well, thank you, Carol, for that. Nicole, Martin, any response there?
I think that's really interesting. Like, this day and age, there's no way that we cannot not talk about sex biologically, how you're fixed up, you know, that's how we were prayed about. People think that Indigenous people didn't know what menstruation was or like all these things because they thought we were inferior intellectually. But the thing is we did have these ceremonies and we did have these role models as our deities, such as Changing Woman in Navajo, you know, who had that ability to create this, to have the ceremony for all of the Dinette girls to have, you know. And if you look at, like, our history as Indigenous people, we were colonized from, like, the get-go. So, like, if we don't have that resource at home, if we don't have that traditional knowledge at home, we definitely don't have that traditional knowledge in public education. So we're lacking like proper sex education, you know, at home and at when we're away from home. So then there's no way of like for me, it was really hard to figure out like being a young menstruating girl in a Western and indigenous world, like how do I carry myself, you know, like I didn't have anyone who wanted to talk to me about it because they said that was dirty or that was gross or like, but it's natural. These things are natural. You know, when we're in a peyote ceremony, we talk about life and that fireplace is life and there's nothing wrong with it, you know, and there's nothing wrong with menstruating and attending a peyote ceremony because it's natural. At least it depends on who the roadman is, but for most men, they're like, that's a natural part of life, so they allow women to be a part of those ceremonies.
What would you say, you know, if young girls are listening now, they want to learn about it, maybe they do, they are in that environment where they just, you know, kind of like what I mentioned about myself, I didn't even want to talk to my sister or my grandma about it. You know, for a girl like that who is maybe not wanting to talk about it, what would you say to them if they were, you know, searching out this program here or listening to this program right now?
I really hope they're listening to the program, you know, because we have a lot of different opinions and point of views. And, like, for me, like, even though you can't, like, talk to your family, you still have your friends. And, like, your friends are going through the same thing with you and you guys can, like, go back and forth with each other about, like, hey, you know, how do we embrace being women now? You know, how do we embrace that?
All right. Thank you, Nicole Martin. And thank you to our other guests. We had Nicole White on and Sharon Assatoyer. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our senior producer is Monica Brain. Derek Toledo is the engineer and Tara Gatewood is the host. I'm Andy Murphy. Join us tomorrow. We're talking about graduation rates in Alaska.
Agnani Huankuda, Ichjakut put, Akujits Kuma Kumtki, Huankutnik Ayagnuk, Gawirlemk Matumi Iralumi Adorina, Nazvagluku Ichjakum, Apujinkla, Amslin Rulrid Arnat Yugulrid, Yunrid Klarat, Insurance Anklakarpnun, Imirin Nachtuden Ichjakut, Asirutlakanun, Kaya Gornaran, 1-800-318-2596, Kwasubakluku Healthcare.gov. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Koyana.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com. Support by the Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oyate Tribes, Dakota Western Corporation, and SWO Plastics. Commercial strength trash bags from 3 to 65 gallons for industrial use by casinos, the IHS, and more. DakotaWesternCorp.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.